Common swifts are fascinating migratory species, so do what you can do to help these birds, please.
Thank you for tuning into Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
And we created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts, and anything that we discuss that might be controversial, I want you to remember, they're our own opinions, and they might be different from yours. We finally have rain!
So what I was going to say is that the big news in the neck of our world is that we had a cougar for one day on Haystack Rock here in Cannon Beach, Oregon, which was like groundbreaking. Everybody had to message me and be like, did you see the cougar? And no, we were out of town.
We were out of town for it.
And actually, I've never seen a wild cougar before.
I haven't either.
But that was, yeah, the huge thing that happened around here. You might have seen it on Facebook or on the news. I think it made national news probably.
Yeah, there's been a pretty significant number of cougars sightings all throughout the Oregon coast. Basically the end of summer now, which is kind of interesting and weird. Not typical for us to see so many cougars down this low, so many mountain lions or pumas or however you're referring to them taxonomically, but large cats, very large cats, long tail. But we had the one on Haystack Rock,
yeah,
and that was super amazing, but for a wildlife viewing spectacle, but it wasn't great for the health of the cat.
Oh, I know. That poor cat. I felt bad for it. It was probably super stressed out. And, you know, at one point a couple times tried to jump in the water to get off of Haystack. And then it saw how many people were crowded around and decided to go back on the rock.
Yeah, it swam around to the backside of the rock where people couldn't see it. And then it kind of just hung out for the whole day until sunset, where all the people left the beach. The beach was cordoned off so they couldn't
access it,
so that there was an escape route for the cat. But then when night came, people left, and then the cat was free under the cover of darkness to get the heck out of Dodge, and it disappeared up into the hills. And there's been a number of sightings since then, along the highway, and a couple trail cams have picked it up, but for the most part it's been doing normal-ish cougar things.
Just walking around the neighborhood. And, you know, it's always good to remember that if you live in a rural area like we do, that there's wildlife out there and you just need to be careful and protect, you know, yourself and, of course, your animals. And that's one of the many reasons why we have indoor cats.
Yes.
Because we like having cats, but we keep them indoors because we want to protect, you know, them from what they could face outside. And also we want to protect the birds from the impacts that our cats could potentially have on those wild animals.
Yeah. So that's what's going on over here.
Yeah.
Had a exciting cougar story.
Yeah.
To tell everyone that we missed because we were out of town.
Yeah. So we heard it secondhand from everyone.
From everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So this last week I had an episode come out of Women Birders Happy Hour featuring Holly from Birds Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So that came out on August 3rd. And then I'll have another one come out later at the end of the month because there's that many Thursdays in August.
So many Thursdays.
So Adrian, another person with Birds Caribbean, will join me for that episode. So check that out. And then another episode of the Bird Nerd Book Club will drop on August 17th. And I haven't done the interview yet, so I'm looking forward to it, with Mary Caldwell, who wrote Curlew Moon, which came out a couple years ago. And it's actually kind of a great tie-in to the talk that we have today for you all. So
awesome.
Check that out anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Absolutely. So before we get into that, we have a couple short more things to talk about. So upcoming travel, a couple of things that we'll be talking about in future episodes coming up. The Wings Over Willapa Festival at the Willapa Bay National Wildlife Refuge is in September. Rio Grande Valley Birding Festival in November coming up. The tentative IC4WB conference in Uganda, the International Conference for Women Birders. San Diego Bird Festival in February, Spring Chirp in next spring and in the April. And at the end of next year, just over a full year away, the Amazon Birding Expedition Brazil for women that Hannah's going to be going on.
And we do still have a couple slots open for that. So if anyone wants to go check out Brazil with me next September, please check it out. The links are in the show notes for more about that event.
Yeah.
And trip.
Event and trip.
Yeah. So, Eric, we also have a Bird Nerd giveaway to announce.
Yes, we do.
So what do we have for you? We have a tea towel and binocular lens cleaner that we got from Sandra Wick, mm-hmm. who is a artist based in the UK. And we got this at Bird Fair. So it's got some UK birds on it, chaffinch on one, mm-hmm. and puffins, not our puffins, but the Atlantic puffins.
On if you live on the East Coast, they're your puffins,
yeah,
too.
On the tea towel. So by August 22nd, what we want you to do is tell us something you can do to help a species in need.
Yeah, so we've covered a number of different projects on this podcast. We've covered things like Flock to Marion, the Champions of the Flyaway,
the Bird-Friendly Coffee,
Great Texas Birding Classic. All of these are different things that we either were able to help in person by promoting it or going and doing something there or just buying something that was bird-friendly or just donating money. Lots of different ways that you can help birds, but we want to hear about more projects and stuff and things that people can do to help species in need.
And it doesn't have to just be birds. You know, there's a big push for protecting gorillas, mm-hmm. but to donate your old electronics.
Mm-hmm. So they don't mine the rare earth elements in sensitive places for gorillas to build your smartphone.
Yeah. So there's a number of other animals, of course, that are in need of help too. So mm-hmm. please send us any suggestions that you have or anything that you do to help a particular species in need. And again, the deadline for that is August 22nd. So please email or Facebook or whatever you want to do to get us your answer.
Yeah. And you'll get these tea towel and binocular lens cleaning kit from made with custom art from Sandra Vick. All right. So we just got back from Global Bird Fair.
And that's why we missed the cougar.
That's why we missed the cougar, because we were at Global Bird Fair. We just got back just recently. It's a big, huge thing. We went there last year. We talked about it a whole bunch. This episode is not going to be all about Bird Fair. We'll talk about it a little bit, but it's not going to be all about Bird Fair. That'll come down the road. But we did some interviews while we were there. Tim Appleton, the director of Bird Fair, he put together this really awesome thing with the help of
Swarovski and Charlie Bingham.
It was a whole joint effort of getting all of this stuff put together. Huge shout out to Charlie. Huge shout out to Oscar. Huge shout out to everyone that put in so much effort to make this happen.
So Swarovski is an optics company.
Yeah.
And in the UK and in the US, they both have these trailers that they take to different festivals.
Yes.
And at when you approach one of these trailers, because in the U.S., you know, we're familiar with that. They set it out in the parking lot of the festival, and you can go out and test some of their different optics. And so they'll have, like, a table that has the different optics mm-hmm. attached to it, and it's a cute little, mobile booth, which is really nice. And so for this, they took out the table, took out kind of the innards of the trailer and put in a table and chairs. So we were able to talk to one another and do a live interview.
Yeah, so they set this thing up right next to the food area, so you've got all the tables sitting out there, lots of places for people to sit. They put some speakers facing outwards, and then Oscar was roped into
being
the audio engineer, and he did all the recording. So again, a huge shout out to Oscar for spending all day, every day of Bird Fair, sitting there, listening to all of us podcasters yammer on and on and on, and listening to these awesome interviewees provide tons of information about whatever their particular topic was. And he sat there, recorded it all, provided us with this audio, and it was awesome.
Yeah, and it was so great. Nice to be able to do this, that we didn't have to bring our own equipment.
I know. Because, so much easier.
Yeah, because we do have a case for, like, our recording stuff, but that takes up, you know, that much more space when you're traveling.
More luggage to haul or all the way around the world. So it was amazing to not have to do that. But so we got all that stuff done for us there. So all we had to do was come up with an interviewee and record and talk to him. So that was huge weight off of our shoulders. So they got that all set up. So we were the first podcast to go.
Yeah.
We were the guinea pigs. The American guinea pigs.
I worked out that we were the first and the last. I think we just didn't say
strong and strong. I think that was the goal. I'm going to tell myself that.
I think it's just because we didn't say when we wanted to go. So we just got like the slots that nobody else wanted or something.
Maybe. Yeah. Which but so fine. So it worked out great though. I think the audio worked great. It was kind of a testing phase for Oscar to make sure all the levels were right and everything. And I think it was awesome. First interview of the day, first interview of the first day of Bird Fair, relatively early in the morning, so there wasn't a ton of people there yet.
Yeah.
But still had a fairly sizable audience, and we talked to Hannah Bourne Taylor.
Yeah, and it was so much fun to talk with Hannah Borden Taylor. We, the interviewees were randomly, semi-randomly placed. Like, mm-hmm. we had a couple folks that we were like, okay, we know we want to interview them. And everyone else kind of did that too. But there was a certain amount of people that they just kind of slotted in. Yeah. And we were like, hey, we're up for whatever.
Yeah.
So fortunately, they put us with Hannah Borden Taylor, which we do know her. We met her last year. I interviewed her for my Women Birders Happy Hour about her new book, Fledgling, that had just come out. And then we met her at Global Bird Fair last year. And so it was fun to, you know, talk about the changes that have happened in her life in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And which she'll talk about in a little bit. But that has a lot to do with common swifts and the parliament in the UK and, you know, trying to get conservation really going to protect the species, which she will definitely tell you much more about. Hannah Borden Taylor is just fantastic and so passionate and powerful. And I have so much respect for her and the things that she's accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first met her, like I said, she had just finished publishing her book, Fledgling, which told about the story of her life in Ghana and the birds that she rescued and rehabbed. And that really, you know, led to this whole effort that she's been pushing forward. And the campaign is called The Feather Speech, which she'll tell you about, and that's to help protect cavity nesting birds in the UK, but it has some great lessons for all of us, no matter where you live.
Yeah. So sit back and relax and enjoy an interview with Hannah Borden Taylor all about how to protect swifts.
Well, to everyone that's here sitting with us, we have a podcast called Hannah and Eric Go Birding, and we are so excited to have Hannah Borden Taylor with us today to talk about all of the cool things that she's been doing lately. So, Hannah, would you tell us about yourself first?
Well, thanks so much for having me on your podcast, especially before I tell you about myself. Thank you, because when we first did a podcast, you were in Oregon and mm-hmm. I was in Oxfordshire, so it's great to meet in person. So, who am I? I'm Hannah, and I'm a nature author. Quick plug, my book Fledgling is available for purchase in Bird Fair. And I'm also a bit of a lover of swifts, so much so that having hand-raised and released a swift, immortalised in Fledgling, I took on the government, basically. So I created the Feather Speech, which is a national conservation campaign for the endangered birds who share our walls, so swifts, house martins, house sparrows, and starlings. I created a petition. I got 109,894 signatures.
Oh, that's amazing.
That is a lot.
And I happened to probably get that through walking through London naked.
I mean, that's one way to do it.
Drop that in there.
Well, someone had to do it.
But first off, let's talk about swifts. So why do you have such a love for swifts?
So firstly, they have such an epic life. If you look at the sort of trump card facts of their life, they spend more time airborne than any other bird on earth. And then when they come home to us, that they sleep on the wing, as I know lots of birds do. But because they are true urban birds, you get to see their amazing flights. And then when you think about these facts, it just becomes even cooler to have them as direct neighbours. And then knowing that they live for 20 years and are actually long-standing members of our communities, I think there's a companionship there that's really, really important. And then also because I did rescue, hand-raise and release a little swift when I lived in Ghana, having that individual connection with that individual bird and looking into the eyes that look like polished planets, I have a loyalty that will never go away. So here I am, and I'll continue to, you know, love swifts actively.
Yeah. So what exactly is going on? You're promoting the feather speech and this whole organization getting these bricks and habitat installed. What's the impetus of why this needs to happen?
Okay, so the Feather Speech campaign's aim is to get swift bricks, which I have one here, so they're bricks that sit flush to the wall of new developments, to get those swift bricks installed on a national scale. So ideally in every new house and building mm-hmm. in the UK, and really probably throughout the whole of Europe, but one step at a time. And that is for two reasons. One, because without swift bricks in new builds, there is no nesting habitat for four red-listed cavity nesting birds, which seems obscenely ridiculous given that they are our closest wild neighbours, so surely we should be creating a safeguarding legacy for them as well as us. And secondly, the context is really important because the cavity nest sites that they use naturally, so the holes in our walls and our roofs, are being blocked off inadvertently on such an unprecedented huge scale due to things like 50,000 old buildings being demolished annually in this country, the whole big insulation push. So the government has had an eco scheme where they've insulated 2.4 million homes. Labour's manifesto is pledging 19 million homes. So if you look at the loss of cavity nesting sites, especially when it's cited by the BTO as far back as 2002 when starlings and sparrows were put on the red list, there is a real need to get these swift breaks in buildings.
Okay, so first we, as humans, removed all their natural habitat, provided them with this artificial habitat, that now we're removing that as well.
Yes, exactly. So we chopped down the trees, so they adapted. What an amazing thing to do.
Yeah.
And then we are not even doing it on purpose, so carelessly not understanding that they're right there. And the fact that they're site loyal and house martins and swifts come back to the same exact hole year on year after a 9-month, you know, on the wing, two crossings of the Sahara Desert, and then they fatally break their wings because we've blocked them out of their home. It just seems a travesty. So at least there's a proven existing solution that's cost neutral and incredibly easy.
Yeah.
So that's the hope.
Yeah, so you brought one of the Swift boxes here with you. For the audio-only audience, can you describe exactly what it is and how it fits into a wall to provide space for the Swifts?
Yes, okay, so it is just, imagine a brick that's just got a bit of a back to it that would go inside the wall, and it's a cavity space. So if you're a person looking up at a finished new wall, all you can see is a very small hole that you might even miss, actually. And this brick would go right at the top of the wall, and it sits flush to the wall, and it comes in different cladding, so it would be identical to all the other bricks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I mean, it's almost camouflaged, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I see it, and I was just kind of actually picturing in my mind how, what additional space you need in the back to be able to fit it. And
it's
honestly, it looks like the size of like 3 bricks total.
Going back.
Yeah, yes. Three bricks.
It's a
bricks
hand's
of depth.
Width.
Yeah,
and that's all the Swifts need. And I find it extraordinary that these are birds that spend most of their time airborne, yet the only ground they'll ever intentionally touch is this big.
Yeah,
that's just extraordinary. The paradox is amazing.
Yeah, just
for me.
Tiny little.
Like, oh, I know.
You can fit your hand over the entire thing.
Yeah, it's just absolutely tiny and such a cool idea of how to provide habitat for them. I had never, you know, been aware of it until I was looking through your website and seeing all your social media and everything. And it's just such an easy solution to be able to provide wildlife habitat. We have barn swallows at our house that they nest in bad places, you know, and we try to exclude them in different ways. And I always think of, like, how can we provide them with a space that they can use? Because we want to have those species around.
Yeah.
And this is a great way of doing that for the Swifts. So being able to co-live with, you know, a really cool species and be able to have it nearby so you can see it all the time and they can eat your insects.
Yeah, exactly. They're pest control from a person's point of view. So
they're fun to listen to when they come in to roost each
Gorgeous.
Night.
Yeah,
they're...
and the aerial displays are just amazing to watch. So, yeah.
Yeah,
easy to campaign for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had your petition. So you did the feather speech in November of this last year. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you put out your petition, had over 100,000 signatures on it. So where is that currently at?
Oh, so Hannah, you've asked a particularly pertinent question right now. So 4 days ago, the parliamentary debate took place. So in England, in the UK, a petition has 6 months to run. If it gets 100,000 signatures, it will be considered for a debate in Parliament. So that's the whole goal. And the debate took place. What was really interesting was that there were 12 MPs who stood up, unanimous and united in their support from all different parties, people who often really very much don't agree with each other, uniting for birds for 2 hours, extremely passionate. And then it was closed down with warm words and absolutely no intention from the government or the opposition. And I'm still processing the betrayal, so a little bit difficult to really put into words at the moment. I've never been an angry person. I feel livid at the moment. But what's really good is that there was a huge outrage by the British public on social media. In particular, there was a very famous politician here called Caroline Lucas, who is probably really the only heroine of the environment, really, politically speaking, or unanimously supported by everyone. She was taking part in the debate, and she put a little clip up on Twitter when she was saying, "I cannot believe what I'm hearing." And it's been seen almost a million times. And as a result of that one tweet and the RSVP getting heavily involved, the ministers are considering changing their mind. Wow. So there is a bit of hope. And at the same time, even if the government lets us down, the good thing is that people like the heads of biodiversity from the NHS and other really huge companies and organisations have approached me already saying we'd really like to talk. So, you know, the awareness is great, and I will not be going away.
That's good.
I apologize for my naivete, as we're American. How many MPs are there?
So this is quite depressing. So I'll just explain the context. So there are 650 members of parliament in Britain. So you could say that only having 12 there is a bit rubbish. Actually, it isn't, because firstly, it's really difficult to get them even engaging at all. Then there'll be clashes with calendars, the busy people. And often these petition debates are, I think, seen as a bit of a tick in the box. And often they aren't that well attended. And maybe 4 MPs might turn up. So the fact that there were 12 is really quite unprecedented. And the fact that they were all supportive was also key, because often you'll get a real debate where there are MPs that are coming to say no or really act against it. And that was not the case. And that was really important, I think, that we all have to hold on to at the moment, that we do have MP support in Parliament. We also have senior politicians supporting this, including the former housing minister, who was right there saying, "What are you doing?" So there is hope, and I've just got to tell myself that as
well. Just got to keep clawing at him.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, and I think even if, you know, that doesn't pass through, you've gotten so much, you know, notoriety and press and everything about this, that hopefully people just do it on their own as they're building their houses. Actually, how much are one of these boxes?
Oh, another perfect question. So there are lots on the market, and they range. The top price is around £140. But this one, which I think is the best for people, birds, and developers, is, wait for it, £30.
Wow.
Okay, I mean,
so
it's not like a big cost, is
so,
it?
So like $35
US. Yeah, it's perfectly reasonable.
For, yeah. It's one of the cheapest measures out there. And it's permanent. That's the key element.
So with the box, like, it's got the real small opening. Once it's installed, you've got it mortared in and all that. Do you have to do any kind of cleaning, or do the Swifts do all of their housekeeping for themselves?
Yeah, the Swifts do it. So all it's a safe, permanent, sustainable. It will last as long as the bill. And that's really important to establish, because lots of conservation measures aren't as sustainable, or they might be taking up more space or more money.
Require maintenance and all that.
Ridiculously straightforward.
Yeah. Just slap it in the wall at the right height. And move on with your life.
And then get on with it,
yeah.
How many can a person have, like, in their house? Like, how close together can they be?
Oh, so because obviously Swifts are colony birds, so house martins both use, and so sparrows and starlings, all of them really, and also great tits and other tits and wrens use them as well, and invertebrates. They can easily have whole colonies. You know, ideally, actually, because they're colony birds, you could have a couple of Swifts in, Swift bricks in one house. That's perfect. I mean, some people on their own put up boxes or bricks and have as many as 30, and then they have cameras. I want to live in their house, to be
really?
Honest. I mean, imagine that.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome.
I know. Now I'm picturing building a fence out of these. That would
be
so fun.
Let's talk.
Okay, sounds good.
So you've mentioned what you've been doing with the government at large. Is there something that random people throughout the community, throughout the UK can do to help further this project, aside from just buying the bricks and installing them? Is there any additional support that the program needs or would like to see out of the public?
Yes. I think, generally speaking, especially if you remember that there are just over 67 million of us in this country, if enough of us care actively, we can firstly get the government to, and secondly, regardless of the government, we can do a lot ourselves. And people are. That's what's so heartwarming and motivating, that in this country, there's a whole underworld of conservation groups across the country, and they're all banded by this title, the Swift Local Network, many of whom are on stands. So if you go and have a look, there's Puffin 14, the artist Jonathan Pomeroy. He's a huge conservation person and amazing at painting as well, the Swifts and the Martins. There are stands across this site that you can go and speak to. And for those listening at home, then obviously you can't go and speak to these people, but you can look online. And there are these local conservation organizations that have local awareness. So they survey the Swift sites that exist. They tell the school and the groups and the WIs and all the different societies about the need to not block up these precious holes and support people if they do need to repair the house. You know, this is a support advice group. And together throughout the country, these local communities are becoming more and more aware. And if that can trickle up to organizations, to developers, to ecologists even, because a lot of ecologists don't always know the specific niche and need of these birds because they're not protected species, then that awareness, that talking about it will massively help. So the campaign has been hugely covered in the national news and also other non-news coverage. And that's been really, really useful because I've realized through that a lot of people, even nature lovers, even bird lovers, bird watchers, didn't know about the problem or the solution. So I think talking about it is key. So if you're listening and want to help, then, you know, Google Swift Bricks or the Feather Speech campaign, even if you don't live in Britain, because of course swifts and house martins are migratory birds. They are global birds. And even if you're listening in America, you might not have the common swift, but you'll have chimney swifts who are suffering the same fates because they're Father Christmases and live in the chimneys. So this is the similar problem that they're facing. And, you know, knowing about it is the first thing. And loving them, you can turn that love into action. So, yeah, I think we really need to realize our own agency and feel empowered that our voice is much louder than theirs. They don't have a voice, even though they scream. So, you know, we can scream for them.
Yeah,
and actually that was going to be my next question is, what do you want people globally to know about conservation?
I think when you break down that massive label, environmental crisis or biodiversity loss, it's really important to do that. You really need to break it down because it's too overwhelming, especially as just an everyday nature lover or somebody not in power or authority. And pick your battle. Figure out the one that you can help. Or maybe it's the nature on your doorstep. Maybe it's doing something small. And realize that doing something small is absolutely vital. And you don't have to be a hero, but you're going to be a mini hero. And actually, if you do something, you might be able to influence your neighbor or your community to do something. And collectively, we can make a difference to the point where we can really turn stuff around. And I think that's really important, especially if people are really engaged with these big words like crisis, of which we are in, it can feel so overwhelming. And the Feather Speech campaign's motto remains in place. I have to sometimes remind myself of it, but it is, passion is a superpower. And we've proved that that is true in this campaign. And we've just got to keep doing that. So however way anyone else does it, it doesn't have to be for Swifts, but you know, everything kind of needs help. So pick your passion and do it.
Yeah. I had a question back about site fidelity. See, you mentioned they're very high site fidelity, so they return to the exact same cavity, the exact same nest every single year. If you are doing an upgrade on your house and you have to close a soffit and you install, will they move over to the brick if it's 3-4 feet away?
So often no. So that can be a problem. So the best option is if you put a soffit up, because obviously soffits are like number one enemies for these birds. You can actually make a small hole where the existing site was in the soffit.
Okay.
And keep that small hole, but obviously generally the soffit will help,
fix
but just keep
it,
that.
Yeah.
And people do that. In fact, some housing associations have done that because there have been emergency colony restoration and local volunteer-led groups have pushed and provided the drills, just drills. You just it's a 6-inch hole. It's not really a big deal.
Yeah.
But if you can't do that or for some reason don't want to but still care enough to put a brick up or a box up, then do it, because at least it's there then. And it's actually, I've seen heartbreakingly swifts return to a blocked site with a swift box right there and they haven't gone for it because that's how specific they are. But at least it's there, because if it's not there, there's no option. And maybe that swift will never find it, but maybe a new one will, or maybe a different bird that needs it will. So at least there is that mitigation.
So what sort of lifespan are we talking about with the swift? So if you want to delay fixing one portion of your house for X number of years until that swift is run the course of its life and install some swift bricks. Like, what sort of time frame are we looking at for how long before they're not breeding? That particular swift isn't using that hole anymore.
Oh, well, so the swift adults that the when they fledge, mm-hmm. they apparently spend as long as sometimes 3 years in the sky. And then when they're ready to breed, they will come and prospect normally the year before, find the site, and then the year later, when they're ready to breed, they'll come back. And once they've established the pair and the site, mm-hmm. they will live in that forever. And what's extraordinary about these 45-gram birds that cross the Sahara Desert twice every year, that fly more time than any other, is that they last and live for 20 years. It's a record of one surviving 22 years. Jeez. And if you put it in the context of garden birds, often their expiry date is maybe 5 years, sometimes three. Mm-hmm. And they're only hanging out in our gardens, and I love them, and they're amazing. But these swifts, I mean, come on, that's extraordinary. You kind of don't want to blot their nest out, because they might have lived in that house way longer than you have, you know?
Yeah.
They might be older than you or your children. Mm-hmm. And they've done so many cool things.
They've traveled a lot further than most of us travel.
They've seen a lot, haven't they?
Seen a lot of stuff.
And what's really cool is that they use landmarks to come home, of course, so that, like many birds do. But to think that they know exactly your address because it's their address and they've flown all that way, the Soffit element is just worth really considering, because they're flying all the way home. They've survived that perilous journey. Mm-hmm. And then they fatally break their wings trying to get in. I've seen videos of them flying, bumping, and then they break their wings and they die. Or sometimes they survive and then they can't find another nest site. And if you look at the context of breeding decline, they've declined 60%, their breeding decline, between 1995 and 2020. So 20 years, 60% done. So that's why every nest site counts, because every breeding season counts and every bird counts. Mm-hmm. And then you've realized that actually... keep the hole.
Yeah. 20 years is shocking to me. So
yeah.
I've always had a thought in my mind is the larger the bird, the longer it lives. The smaller the bird, the shorter it lives.
Yeah.
Hummingbirds, stuff like that. The sparrows.
Oh, they're the closest relative, obviously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The hummingbird, yeah.
Yeah, they're both apodiformes, right?
Yeah, pretty cool bird.
But I always think like, okay, smaller doesn't. So I was just thinking, okay, well, maybe you got 5 years. But 20 years is a really long time for a bird that's fits inside your hand.
Yeah, it's like the size of a Kit Kat.
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's cool, isn't it? It's so cool. It's absolutely amazing.
And it's, you know, it's incredible what you've done for all of this work. And congratulations. I know it must be really frustrating with the government situation currently, but the amount of awareness that you've built with this whole project is just absolutely incredible. To have 109,000 people come together to sign something for birds, I think is just absolutely amazing.
No, I think anyone that cares is going to feel it. I think that's what's so important about this campaign is it's not mine. I started literally naked and alone. And now it's this huge group of actually mostly strangers coming together for the closest wild neighbors. I think that's amazing. So we just got to keep going. We can do it. I can't do it alone. I really need a lot of help.
Everyone, 109,000 people that signed the petition and everybody else. 109,000 people agreeing on one thing is quite an accomplishment by itself.
Yeah, and only in 6 months as well.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So what do you want to see in the future with these swifts?
Well, I want swift bricks in every new build, and I'm quite stubborn, luckily. So the feather speech will remain in place until we have achieved that goal. So unfortunately, that might be years. Who knows? But I'm 36, so I hopefully will live a little bit longer, and I will continue to fight for this, because I can't give up now, can I? So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be broke. I will be probably quite angry, and I'm absolutely determined.
Awesome. Well, one last time before we kind of close this down, can you give us the websites that people may be interested in checking out, and maybe list off a couple resources that we can direct people to? And we'll include everything in the show notes that we can think of, but just for the people who are only listening.
Yeah. Okay. So if you Google Hannah Bourne Taylor, I reckon that quite a lot of stuff would come up. You might see some crazy photos of me painted on feathers walking on a very wet, cold day.
A day like today.
Yeah, a day like today.
That looked miserable.
Hey, you'll definitely know who it is. HannahBourneTaylor.com, that's my website. I haven't updated it that recently, but it's got a lot of stuff on it. Twitter, of course, because of the bird logo, is my social media of choice, and that's actively updated all the time for the campaign. The RSPCA PB has been supporting actively since the very beginning. And so they also have a lot about the problem, the solution, and the Feather Speech campaign. So you can Google the RSPB, and that will take you to the website and information about that. So, and also the Swift local network, but that's quite niche for this country. But Google Swift, see what comes up. Let me know.
Everything Swift goes back to Taylor.
At the moment, it does. I get the algorithms on social media. It's fantastic. Anyone that mentions Swift is like right on my notification. It's brilliant. It's like, ah, woohoo!
There it is.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And it's, you know, we're excited to be at Bird Fair again. Well, it's been so fun talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. You're such a cool podcast. And I'm going to have one of your cocktails later.
Sounds good.
That's a good idea.
So it's unfortunate that we have destroyed so much habitat, and then the birds went through and adapted, and then we destroyed their adapted habitat. But I'm just so in awe of Hannah and the passion that she has for this, and the power that she is just, like, you know, putting the wheels to the pavement about getting things done rather than just sitting around talking about it.
Oh, yeah. And she's got so much energy, and she wants this conservation. She wants all of this stuff to happen. And if she mentioned it a little bit during the interview, but you can pretty much Google her name, and you'll literally the first thing that comes up is a couple of YouTube videos of her walking through the park, just completely painted, and giving this feather speech. It's this whole long, passionate speech about why it's emotional, and it's raw, and it's this whole thing all about conservation of swifts and why we need to care about the things that share our houses and share our neighborhoods with us. Mm-hmm. So it's great. If you want to listen to that, I guess you've already listened to the interview, so you can't go back and listen to it before, but it's a great pairing with the passion that she brings in this interview.
And we'll include her YouTube channel also. Yeah. So if you want to go through and watch that and watch her different videos that she has, they're all just really powerful. And so I'm American, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen common swifts before when we've traveled here and there, but I don't really know a whole lot about their life history and about the history of humans and the common swifts together. We tore down, you know, the UK has been developed for hundreds of years.
Generations.
There's very little natural landscape left that a lot of these birds can go to. And so they've adapted, like I said, to the human habitats. And they have found little crevices in people's homes and created their own homes in that. And now, you know, as humans are modernizing, they're taking away those places for them to live.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, people don't realize that that's happening.
Totally,
that's the biggest thing, that they don't realize.
They're trying to fill the holes in their home. I get that.
Well, and they're trying, as Hannah said, Hannah Bourne Taylor said, that the government has this ecological scheme, or this environmental scheme, that's what she called it. They want for people to be more environmentally friendly, so you more energy efficient home, you get rid of all the holes, less leakage, all that stuff. But while doing that, it's causing environmental harm towards this animal that has adapted to the fact that we have holy houses. Like, they're just... That houses that have holes all over.
Not a church.
Not a church. Well, some of them are churches, but it's a holy, holy place, I guess. But they've made this adaptation to this, and now people are closing them up and not even realizing that they're closing it up for the most part. I think some people probably realize, but for the most part, they're not noticing. They don't realize that they're closing it up and then now killing a bird because they're trying to follow what is being taught as the most environmentally useful thing to do is to
economical, so you're not like losing heat out of holes.
Exactly.
In your house.
Yeah.
And it's just so amazing to me that, like, just putting in this little box and replacing one of your bricks with this little box can solve that problem. It's an incredible thing that you can do. Like, if I had a house in the UK and this was the situation with us, I feel like I would fill every single brick in the house.
Yeah,
we
just would have those bricks. That's the whole wall would be just those bricks.
It's so cool. You know, if I had a better way for the barn swallows to nest around our house, I would be much more happy with them doing that. If I had a manufactured thing like that, rather than having to,
you know, deal with all of the mud and everything that they're putting on your house. Not to say that I don't love having barn swallows around, because I do. It's very cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can do tree swallows. We can do, we have a number of different cavity nesters that we have set up cavity nesting boxes in our yard and stuff. It's like, that's another cavity nesting thing that you can, that's another cavity nesting species, especially in the old world and in the UK and all throughout most of Europe, that they can set up these bricks that are, it's so much easier too than ours, because they're completely self-cleaning. You never need to go and deal with it. You just put it up and then the swift cleans it, and you don't have to go up like a bluebird house or like
clean it out.
Tree swallows, where you have to clean it out or stuff like that. They self-clean. They pull everything out and they reuse it.
But so while we were at Bird Fair, we stayed at a bed and breakfast that mm-hmm. wasn't too far away, and we heard the common swifts over, you know, head each night, and in the morning when we wake up, they would be flying outside. So it is just a really iconic species in that area, and I really enjoyed seeing them and listening to them, and it's a powerful experience, you know, after listening to what Hannah has to say about it and the efforts that she's made to mm-hmm. then hear them flying overhead and down the brick roads of these charming villages in the English countryside. And it really just, you know, drives it home about why the species is important. And if you can make those efforts to protect and conserve it, then, you know, why not?
Yeah. Well, and not to continue hammering it home again, but Hannah mentioned it. The swifts, some of them have lived in the house longer than you have. Like, number of years, not necessarily number of days. Like, I mean, they're only there for a couple of months and then they leave and then they come back for a couple of months every year. Mm-hmm. But like some of them, if they're 20, if it's an 18-year-old, you bought the house 10 years ago, that could have been living in your house for 8 years longer than you've been living there.
Yeah.
And so they deserve a house just as much as we do.
Totally. And there's so many species that are impacted by habitat loss due to human causes. It's not just the common swifts. This is just an example of one of the many species. So, you know, I really feel strongly that we need to do what we can to help protect and conserve these species, because, you know, even though we might see this focal species, there's mm-hmm. there's lots of other ones too. And there are some easy changes to make. Of course, there's some really hard things that we need to do to protect and conserve these species. But this is just an example of something that would be pretty easy, I imagine. Yeah. And I'd love to see, you know, different little governments within the UK add this onto their planning, so more houses do incorporate this as new builds and then as renovations are done.
Yeah. So I wanted to say thank you again. Huge thank you to Hannah Byrne Taylor for sitting down and talking with us and giving your whole story on this. And thank you to Charlie Bingham for putting kind of arranging all of this. Thank you to Oscar for editing it or for recording us for us, and Tim Appleton and everyone at Bird Fair for being able to get this together so we can get this information out to anyone that's listening to us.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about those swift boxes, Eric will post in the show notes about it, but we also took a little video of it, so we'll post that to Facebook mm-hmm. so you can check out what those swift boxes actually are.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you guys all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and or learned something new. Please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to us. If you would like to connect with us on the socials, please follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram. You can follow our Facebook page at Hannah and Eric Go Birding, our Twitter at We Go Birding, or email us at hannahandericgobirding@gmail.com. You can also check out our website at www.gobirdingpodcast.com. Tell us what you like, tell us what you hated, and share us with your friends.